The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Mike Tomlin news conference momentarily here. Our friend part-time pomp. Actually, that's unfair. He's all-time pomp and all-world pomp. He's everywhere at all times, and he's introducing Tomlin any second now as we get ready for the Eagles breakdown, a Pickens update, which should be fascinating. Kabali reporting could be out multiple weeks here. I can't wait for all this, Limits. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Mike Tomlin presser reaction brought to you by your local Parmore stores. Remember, if there's not a Parmore store near you now, there will be soon, and I'll be reacting with Brian Becco.
Good afternoon. As always, I'll start with a quick synopsis of our last performance. I probably should have mentioned this after the game. In reviewing the tape, man, it just really stood out to me, the collective component of the victory. It was a team effort in a lot of ways, whether it was individuals getting an opportunity to step up in expanded roles due to the lack of availability of individuals, or the fact that we made splash plays in really in all three phases, and the complementary component of the splash plays in all three phases. We started slow on offense, and the defense provided a short field in terms of the interception by KB. And then the offense was able to turn that into seven. And our red zone execution has improved since our mini bye and our focus on that. And so it's just good to see some of those things and some of the splash plays or significant plays happening in special teams. The consistency of Boswell, the turnovers in the kicking game, the gunner play, Ben Skowronek's efforts, et cetera. I just thought that everybody had a playmaker's mentality. Everyone wanted to be the reason why we're successful. And when you get collectives playing like that, man, that's when you get an opportunity to play really good team football, compliment one another, smile in the face of adversity that gets presented in play. And there's always going to be adversity. And the way that you do it oftentimes is just simply complimenting or supporting those others. We started the second half. We gave up a big kickoff beyond the 50. And the defense got real stout right there. And then we were able to get out of that circumstance, for example, without giving up points. And so hopefully we're not only growing in terms of experience, but there's some intangible growth there as you experience those type days as a collective. I know as we continue through this journey and the road gets narrow, that experience is going to be needed to face some of the challenges that we face. Quickly, talking about some health-related things, I'll start first with George and summarize what transpired last weekend and give you a snapshot of what this week looks like. As I mentioned, leading up to the game, he experienced some hamstring discomfort post-practice on Thursday, getting some post-practice work. Felt pretty good on Friday. We decided to exercise a little bit of precaution, worked at him in a limited fashion on Friday, and wanted to save all those bullets for Sunday. Wanted to see what he looked like when he got to the stadium and then make a determination of how many plays we thought would be appropriate to utilize him in. Obviously, if he wasn't going to be a full participant, we wanted to, you know, gear his participation toward weighty passing game moments, if you will. But when we got to the stadium, it was evident that, you know, maybe the circumstance was a little bit more significant than we had hoped. And so we made the prudent decision in terms of shutting him down and not allowing a small problem to become a bigger one. Post game, man, we had an opportunity to get him an MRI. The injury did show up on MRI. It's a little bit more significant than what we imagined. And so we're just in the mindset now of just getting him healthy as quickly as we possibly can. There's a potential for this week, but it's an outside chance. If you press me, I'd probably say he's out or could be characterized as doubtful as we sit here. But again, like we always do, we'll go through the normal procedure. We'll let participation be our guide in terms of availability and then obviously the quality of that participation. Some guys that are probably in a little bit better position from a participation standpoint, Larry Ogunjobi with his groin and Deshaun Elliott with some hamstring tightness. We'll watch those guys, particularly at the early part of the week. And again, hopefully there's an uptick in their participation and the quality of it as we push forward toward game time. Dante Jackson has some spotty availability in game. He was sick on Sunday, but was able to get through. I don't imagine that he'll be limited. And some other guys got some minor bumps and bruises associated with competition. And so, you know, as we always do, we won't waste a lot of time focusing our energies on those not available to us. We'll appropriately focus our energies on those that are and how we divide that labor up and how we can best position them to perform and play winning football individually and collectively. Now on to the Philadelphia Eagles. Man, really excited about this one, man, this Pennsylvania State Championship. Excited about representing Whipple in this. I was just joking this morning, man, we could play this game in Breezewood, man, that'd be awesome. They're a really good football team. They need no endorsement from me. They're the winners of 9 straight. When you look at the tape, man, you see exactly why. I'll start first on offense. The acquisition of Saquon Barkley has got to be the most significant acquisition in the NFL in 2024. That's what the tape looks like. He's been dominant, eye-opening at times, obviously. Highlight real caliber plays, long runs, touchdowns, et cetera. It starts there for us. If you don't minimize him in some way, you're not even going to position yourself to have a chance to be successful. And so, obviously, he's got a lot of our attention at the early stages of the week. But he can't have the totality of your attention. I remember the last time we were in a stadium with him, I think it was 2020, and he was playing for the Giants, and I think Daniel Jones was a very young quarterback at that time. We were able to focus a significant amount of our energy on him. We're not afforded that this time around. Jalen Hurts, man, is a top-notch quarterback, decision-maker, leader, passer, escape artist. You name it, he's capable of doing it. And so, you know, we have the challenge of working to minimize both guys and making the decisions, schematic decisions associated with what's required to do so. You couple that with dynamic receiving options on the other end of Jalen Hurts' passes in the form of a couple top-notch guys. They've also acquired Dotson from the Commanders. And so, man, they have the type of group that you got to make some real hardcore decisions about working to minimize. And so we're working through that, the strategic component of that. Obviously, you better play well. I've talked about their eligibles, their running back, their quarterback, their receivers. But you can't talk about Philadelphia without talking about their front. They have some of the most dynamic people in football up front. Lane Johnson, you know, being the bell cow of that group. Their offensive line has been stellar for a number of years. They're not talked about enough for obvious reasons. You get an opportunity to talk about the dynamic playmaking of guys like Saquon and see the highlight real plays like him jumping people backwards that oftentimes you miss the brilliance of a guy like Landon Dickerson, man, or Lane Johnson. And so we recognize that the game is played up front, that they usually provide the wave that the little men ride. And so We respect that component of what they do and their capabilities in that area as well. On the defensive side of the ball, they got a bunch of young, talented players, a bunch of Georgia guys, guys that I've seen in draft planning over the last several years, ultra talented. They've been talented up front for a number of years. They play a lot of people, and they invest in those people in terms of talent acquisition. The same could be said about this collective. They do a really good job of mixing in some schematics, man. Vic Fangio is a veteran coordinator who's very multiple in terms of the schematic things that he throws at you. I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the second level play. I think when you think about Philly's defense, you think about the talent acquisition up front, the quality playmaking of the young people in the secondary in particular. But when I turned the tape on, man, I saw two inside linebackers that are productive in all areas. They're high volume tacklers. They're very good in underneath defense, be it man or zone. They're opportunistic. They create a lot of turnovers for the group. They're really good blitzers. I just got a lot of respect for that collective of inside linebackers and the quality in which they're playing at this juncture. As I mentioned earlier, they got a couple of dynamic young playmakers in the back end, and Mitchell and Cooper, and studied those guys in draft prep, not surprised by the contributions that they're able to provide. Both guys are football players first and cover men second. In that, they're very physical for their position. They don't turn down physical confrontation. They display a global football awareness that allows them to make plays other than cover people. Cooper's shown a nice knack for screen destruction, for example, a perimeter play, destruction, bubble screens, wide out screens, etc. And so they got a real formidable group. But again, you know, I'm not surprised by that. You're going to have some tangible evidence when you're talking about an NFL collective winning 9 games in a row. We're excited about being in this 5-star matchup this week, and we show our excitement by locking in on our preparation. And so I'm excited about getting started with our players tomorrow morning in that regard. I'll pause and open it up for questions.
Mike, when you look at the situation with George, is there a big picture element involved that you know, you want to make sure you're cautious and you don't aggravate the thing?
No, to be honest with you, no. You know, there's enough things that have our attention in the here and now. We've kind of been in that posture all year. I don't imagine that would change. And so we'll see where the week leads us.
It's a little different. I mean, he didn't practice on Friday, but you were still planning on him potentially being available.
He did limited work on Friday.
Yeah, but I mean, is it a little different, though, having a full week to prepare for that as that potential?
You mean the strategy component? Certainly. Certainly. You know, if he's limited, and he probably certainly will be limited at the early portions of the week, it'll give guys an opportunity to get extended in-helmet perspective on their prep if they are to get expanded roles again this week, certainly.
What does it say about some of the professionalism that was there, that those guys were still able to go out even though maybe they hadn't planned, like a Scotty Miller?
And I think that's why I'm just so high on the collective. Those guys might be new to us, but they're not new to the National Football League. They're pros, man. They behave that way. Whether you're talking about Scotty Miller or Van Jefferson or Ben Skowronek, for that matter, all guys have been in the NFL, man. And I just think you saw, you know, shades of that in their performance and the consistency of their performance last weekend.
Mike, in terms of his knowledge of the offense and what you've seen from him in a limited time, can Mike Williams be a guy that could step up for you in that role?
No question. I felt like he did. He did last week. As I mentioned last week in this setting, I view it only as a matter of time before his presence gets felt in a more consistent way in stadium. Practice has been like that for a number of weeks, and usually when you see people making plays in practice, it's a precursor to them making plays in stadium. And so George, available or not, I expect the overall trajectory of his performance and inclusion in performance to be on the incline.
After halftime, did you guys make any adjustments in the passing game to, now that you had 30 minutes under your feet without George, about how to adjust against Cleveland?
You know, I don't know that we waited until halftime. You know, halftime was an opportunity to solidify some of the in-game adjustments that we were, you know, we were working through in the first half. And so there were no real new discussions at halves, but we did revisit some, you know, some in-game discussions that we were having in the first half.
When you look at the, obviously the offense as a whole has drastically improved this season, but still no touchdowns on opening drives. What do you guys have to do in order to get off to a better start?
We're just going to keep working. You know, we know that we're not defined by the first possession of a football game or the first 15 minutes of a football game, for that matter. Probably more times than not, you're more defined by the last possession of the game or the last 15 minutes. And so, you know, oftentimes we spend a lot of our time and energy in terms of growth and development in those areas. And, you know, we'll keep working in some of the areas that you mentioned.
Mike, you mentioned the Eagles' offensive line. What differences are you seeing from Saquon Barkley running behind this line than maybe you saw his performance with the Giants?
To be honest with you, I didn't see a lot and didn't study a lot in the Giants being an NFC team, and so I'm probably not the appropriate person to ask in terms of comparing the two situations for him.
How about as far as just what you're seeing from him this year with the Eagles?
You know, he's dynamic. He is. He checks all the boxes in terms of physical talent. He's got top-end speed. He can hit the home run, as evidence of the Rams game. He's good in tight space areas. He can get downhill. He can lower his pads and run behind his pads. He's got good lateral abilities. He can make people miss. He's just a really complete player, and obviously been a significant acquisition for them.
Mike, along those lines, this will be a test, obviously, for your rush defense. Last year, I think you finished 19th. This year, top five. Those improvements, is it as simple as Cam Hayward is back and playing at an all-pro level? Is there more to it than that?
I haven't spent any time digesting this year relative to last year, to be quite honest with you. You know, our goal is to be better in all areas every year. And so, you know, that's where our focus is. But as you mentioned, Cam is available and playing at a high level. We've also acquired Patrick Queen and some other significant players that I think are doing a really awesome job. Deshaun Elliott, I think, is tackling at a high level from a safety position. But in terms of comparing it to last year, I hadn't wasted any time doing so.
Go ahead. What's behind, do you think, Cam playing at such a high level at this point in his career? Obviously, I mean, he's kind of built each year when he's healthy, but what does it say about a guy that he's able to do that?
I just think it's, you know, business as usual, to be quite honest with you. When Cam's healthy, he plays the way he plays right now.
Mike, you guys didn't win as many short distance situations the first time in Cleveland. This time around, each time you guys ran the ball, third and five or short, you converted. What did you see an improvement from your offensive line against their front this time around?
It's not always an improvement, to be quite honest with you. Sometimes it's just venue. You're in a road game venue. You're working on solid count. You lose the advantage of beating people to the punch. You work in your venue. You get the benefit of a cadence. And sometimes it just is simple as that.
Mike, Russ has played a lot of meaningful football in December and January. What, from his experience, do you want to see translate as you guys kind of get down the stretch here?
You know, I hadn't thought a lot about his experience outside of Pittsburgh, to be honest with you. I didn't want to prejudge him in any way. I've just been enjoying the process of getting to know him and working with him and building new memories and gaining an understanding of what he needs to do in this environment for us. All of us come with something, you know, good experience, baggage, et cetera. But I've just learned over the years to not spend a lot of time dwelling on some of that and really just give guys an opportunity to find their space in this environment and prosper in this environment. He's done an awesome job of that. Certainly his experience is an asset to him and to us, but it's not something that we spend a great deal of time discussing.
As far as a young trio of offensive linemen, Broderick, Mason, and Zach, how have you seen them grow just lining up together now, a few months now playing together?
I just think there's no shortcut to experience. We've been in some hot circumstances with that young collective, as you mentioned. They face some top-notch people. They're going to face some top-notch people this week. But I think anytime you're successful, man, there's growth in it, and we've thankfully had some success. We faced some challenges, but we've had enough success, man, to keep this group moving and motivated. And I see signs of that growth. You know, they all are capable. That's why we drafted them in the positions that we drafted them. But there's a learning process. There's an adaptation to this environment, and sometimes it's good to go through that with company. And so I would imagine The collective has been an asset to the collective in that regard as well. I know those guys spent a lot of time together, and that community, I'm sure, strengthens them as individuals.
Mike, you're getting set to kick off 3 games in 11 days. How do you kind of approach what's to come here?
I'm really just focused on Philadelphia. I don't care what's on the other side of it.
Does it affect your approach to practice workload, division of labor, things like that, knowing that there's this is the start to a stretch like that?
It may affect it on the other side of Philadelphia, but I have a 7-day cycle this week, and so I'm not going to make the simple complex. We got a task this week. We got a job to do. We got a finite amount of time and materials and talent and manpower, as do they. And so with that in mind, we're going to prepare and focus our energies on winning this game. There's so many variables that could affect the preparation process on the other side of this game, the attrition component and so forth, that it's fruitless and almost a waste of time to get beyond the template component. Certainly, I have a calendar and a template, but that does not have my time or attention. The Philadelphia Eagles do.
Mike, you mentioned off the top complementary football. What allows a team to play complementary football?
Playmaking. You know, we can make it out to be something that's mystical, but you need a play, you make a play. You know, we start slow on offense. We need to provide them a short field. KB picks a screen off, puts them on a short field. It's playmaking.
Mike, Andy White and a couple others spent some time in Philadelphia. In that vein, do you see similarities in terms of how both organizations are built and the brand of football that you guys both want to play?
To be honest with you, I hadn't asked Andy that. Andy's better positioned to answer that. I'm just, you know, we don't play these guys very often. I got a finite amount of time. They won 9 games in a row. There's some real meaty, tangible things on a Tuesday that has my attention. You know, that might be an interesting conversation over lunch on Friday in terms of some of those things.
What have you liked about James Pierre's play when he's had to replace Dante Jackson, both against Washington and the Browns?
You know, James is a guy that just works extremely hard. He practices hard. He's improved continually since he's been a part of us. That's why we were excited about doing business with him again, to be quite honest with you. And I just think that you create your fortune. Everyone was happy for him to get an opportunity to make that splash play for us because everybody sees the work that he puts in, how selfless he is, what a good teammate he is. So you're excited for a guy when he gets an opportunity to show his improvements and his capabilities.
Along with creating his own fortune, has he created a sense of comfort that he didn't feel compelled to move Cam and leave him in the position to be more versatile?
You know, I'm always pretty comfortable. We've got quality depth in the secondary. We've had it all year. So I don't know that I was uncomfortable at any point regarding our divisional labor or the talent at our disposal in the secondary.
Mike, when you guys traded for Mike Williams, you said you didn't know yet if he was the right fit for this offense. Given the sample size that you've seen from him now, do you feel comfortable saying that he is the right fit? What have you seen from him?
Keep watching. Very much in development. Again, as I've mentioned, seen some quality playmaking in practice. I thought last weekend was a significant step in seeing some more, and so let's hope that that continues.
Mike, this was the first time you had Alex Highsmith, Nick Herbig, and T.J. Watt all back since like week 3. Just what do you see out of that unit?
You know, just continual pressure. We invest a lot in that collective. We added to that collective in terms of Preston Smith as well. And you can't run out of Rushman. The weighty moments oftentimes that we refer to that define games in settings like this are one-dimensional passing circumstances, third down, 2-minute, et cetera, combinations of multiple situations, third down in a red zone. And so you can't run out of Rushman. I'm glad that we have everyone at our disposal, and I'm excited about watching that collective continue to divide that labor up and let their talent show individually and collectively.
Mike, what is it about Landon Roberts that allows him not only to make the plays in the backfield like he did the other day, but even take on the blockers and blow up plays even if he doesn't?
You know, he's a 9-on-7 linebacker. I laugh often because I remember being at his pro day. Kevin Colbert and I stood in the parking lot at the University of Houston, man, and talked to he and his parents after pro day for about an hour. Because we went down there, you know, on an expedition, if you will, looking at a lot of things and a lot of people. But we were really enamored with this guy's demeanor, his relationship with the game, the way he played the run. We knew that that guy was going to be an NFL run-stopping linebacker. And, you know, almost a decade later, man, he's got a resume that kind of illustrates that. And so that was our interest in him when we acquired him a year ago. And he's done nothing but prove that. And I'm thankful to have him. He shows up in moments, as you mentioned, that fourth down moment. You know, he made a really significant play in a goal line circumstance against Dallas, man. If we recover that ball, man, we might all still be talking about that play. Obviously, it's a big week for him because we play Mr. Barkley. And so saw him in the building earlier. He's watching some tape. He's a professional. He understands his skill set. He understands his role. He's good for team.
Along the offensive line, the secondary, we often hear about the importance of cohesion and experience. You've infused two rookies successfully along your O-line. They've done that in the secondary, two rookies. Can you speak about how that either shows up for them or for you guys, how those guys have come together quickly and what they've been asked to do?
You know, it's probably indicative of the maturity of the four young people that you mentioned, ours and theirs. As I mentioned, I had an opportunity to meet theirs in the draft process. I met Mitchell down in Mobile and interviewed him several times and went to Iowa and saw Cooper and all of that. And both are mature beyond their years. They got good relationships with the game. They got good football intellect. I think those things could also describe our two. And I think that's usually the case when a young guy positions himself to be a significant contributor to an NFL outfit. There's a maturity beyond their years, and there's a football intellect there that's probably indicative of some really good training and some natural aptitude regarding schematics.
You talked about the youth of Broderick Jones and him overcoming trials, but what have you seen from him, especially the past few weeks, that has shown progress? It looks like he's been a bigger asset in the run game and been more consistent for you guys.
You know, he's working every day to be better. I'm not trying to tell a story. The growth and development continues.
Like both you and the Eagles, the two organizations have kind of built this brand of physical football. What excites you the most about the mano-a-mano component in this matchup?
I just like playing good people, particularly this time of year. It doesn't matter to me that it's the Eagles, to be quite honest with you. The people that we play are generally nameless, gray faces to us. We focus on the things that we need to do, how we divide our labor up, how we play to our strengths, how we minimize our weaknesses. But I do like playing really good people. I think there's growth in it. Obviously, you got to get the job done. But, man, I think there's significant growth in pitting your collective talents and skills versus big-time opponents, and there's certainly that.
Mike, with the number of soft tissue injuries you've had throughout the season, are there any adjustments you make in how you practice or when guys do practice?
You know, that is ongoing and continual. You know, but I just think that that's normal business operating procedure. I think if you're going to be good at what we do, you better have a hardcore plan while at the same time being light on your feet to make necessary adjustments. That's why I haven't delved too much into, you know, this three-game sequence on the other side of Philadelphia because, you know, there's so many variables involved. It's somewhat a waste of time. I'll do what's required this week for the collective based on the information and the players I have available. I'll do the same thing next week, and really it's the same thing regarding a lack of player availability for whatever reason.
Anyone else? All right.
Thank you.
Brian Bacco joins me now. The Mike Tomlin Presser Reaction brought to you by your local Parmore stores. Remember, if there's not a Parmore store near you, there will be soon. Brian, something's curious here. Perhaps you can clear it up for me. You can read Brian's stuff at postgazette.com. Wonderful to have you again.
Thanks, Joe.
You're welcome. The George Pickens situation. He's having discomfort after practice Thursday from post-practice work that day. Okay. Friday, he's limited. Sunday, he shows up to the stadium. Wanted to save those bullets for Sunday, Tomlin said. He shows up Sunday and there's more discomfort. Then they give him the MRI? That doesn't make sense to me. I'm not a doctor, as you know. Why wouldn't you give him? So in other words, you were set to play him without an MRI? You were set to play him thinking this was a small issue, and thereby you were really prepared to make this worse, by the way, if he had played, and then you give him an MRI after the fact and say, oh yeah, this is worse than imagined. That doesn't make sense to me. Was that in first? Did you get the impression that that was in fact the first MRI that they gave him?
Yeah, that's what it sounded like to me, and I'm not a doctor either, despite you always calling me Dr. Batko, among others. But I, you know, since yesterday morning, I've tried to inform myself a little bit more about the nature of these soft tissue injuries, especially hamstrings. And from what I can tell, they can be finicky. They can be difficult to really sort of see on the imaging. All right, how bad is this? Is he going to be able to bounce back pretty quick? Is this thing going to heal? Or is it worse than we initially thought? And taking Tomlin at face value here today, it was worse than they initially thought. Now, what
through
what
the else? MRI. So the obvious question, Brian, is why were you going to put him on a football field without an MRI first?
I actually didn't see George warming up before the game, testing it out pregame. So I am a little confused about the murkiness of, I think, was it an Adam Schefter report that there was optimism, but he was going to have to test it out pregame. And then Mike Tomlin in the tunnel with Tracy Wolfson from CBS basically said, he didn't say much of anything, but I mean, he didn't rule him out or anything. So maybe a little bit of gamesmanship going into a divisional matchup too. We know he doesn't really want to provide more than the injury report requires him to provide. But yeah, maybe it's as simple as George was feeling some tightness and it was worse than they thought. Now they do another MRI.
Or an MRI in the first place.
Yeah, or an MRI in the first place. And now they got to be cautious with him. So,
yeah, that seems weird. I guess if I had either Tomlin or a football doctor or a regular doctor in front of me, I would say after he felt discomfort Thursday, why not just give him an MRI right away?
So I do think, Joe, you can sometimes have some inflammation and stuff with those muscles after a lot of activity or after exercise. So that could be part of why you would wait a little bit. But yeah, I mean, we talked to George on Friday after practice, and now granted, nobody asked him about it, but he certainly didn't offer up any information either on that. It was all
right
geared toward the penalties and the Browns and Greg Newsom. So the timing of all this is rather uncanny, but I mean, this is a big loss for their offense if he's
not out there
for the Eagles.
I guess I'm thinking this through real time here, as are you. If a guy is only limited, any player, but especially someone as valuable as Pickens, he's hurt Thursday, he's limited Friday.
And I'm getting the sense that he was very limited, Joe.
Okay.
Because talking to guys after the game, Van Jefferson said he didn't practice.
So even more to the point, he's very limited Friday, and I'm still thinking about putting him on the field on Sunday with that kind of injury. I don't need to be a doctor to know you can really aggravate that by going out and playing. Why not just do an MRI first before that? That's my question, is why was the MRI after all this and not beforehand to see, okay, is there something more happening here, or can we risk putting him on the field? Because he's still saying, Tomlin is, that the idea was to play him only in those weighty moments. To me, if a guy's not good to play, then he's not good to play, especially it would seem that position where you're sprinting half the game. It's just the whole thing is causing me to try to go back and rethink it from the beginning. It just seems very odd.
And ultimately, that is what Mike Tomlin decided. And as he said, I think post-game, he just wasn't comfortable with putting him out there in that one, and that would track it. I think the other variable here too, Joe, is you never really know exactly what the player's reporting to trainers or coaches. Maybe George was underselling it initially.
All the more reason to get a picture. Because players always want to play. It's like a concussion.
Right. Yeah.
They're always going to say, I want to play. Only with a concussion, you don't have the benefit of an easy little MRI to give you the information. It seems weird that they would have put him out on a field without an MRI, but afterwards went and did it. And oh my God, it's worse than we thought.
Well, they didn't put him out on the field. So in that sense, they're validated. But yeah, even Van Jefferson said too after the game that George was kind of telling them, oh yeah, I'm good. I'm going to play. Don't worry. And then obviously, things changed either when he woke up Sunday morning or whatever they did to test it out pregame. I actually didn't even see George on the field until right when the game started. I was trying to look for him during the national anthem and all that stuff. But maybe there was a little bit of gamesmanship in this from the Steelers. They didn't list him as doubtful. They list him as questionable. So the Browns don't necessarily know what's going on there with him. But Arthur Smith told a bunch of the offensive players, I guess, you know, 90 minutes before the game when inactives came out that, yeah, we're not going to have George, so we're going to need to tweak some things. No pun intended.
No pun intended, yes. I guess in the end, thank goodness he didn't play.
Yeah.
Thank goodness he didn't, you know, suddenly really want to push it in warm-ups, even though it might have been hurting, and saying, I feel great, I'm going out here, watch me run, even if he was feeling pain. That would have been disastrous to have him on the field only to discover later that this was, as Tomlin said, more significant than what we imagined. It sounds to me like he's out. If you're out the next two games, then you're out the next three, because the third one comes like an hour after the second one, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've also been told that, you know, these hamstrings can be kind of touch and go. Some people can heal quicker from them than others, and it really,
I mean, we know that from our own experience,
right?
I don't
even have enough muscles to have any fast twitch. I've never pulled a hamstring or a groin or anything because I don't think my body can even jump high enough or move quick enough laterally to sustain such an injury. But right. Yeah, I mean, I think there are certainly degrees of it, and some people can bounce back quicker. Justin Fields told me he had a grade 2 hamstring strain when he was out for that one night game. Was at the Giants game, right?
Yeah.
And then he missed that game, and then they had the bye, and then he was available again the very next week, and was at Washington, I think. So,
well, I like what they've done in the end here, or at least I think maybe they got lucky in the end, or smart, I'm not sure which, that he didn't play, because I feel like as big as these games are, Brian, that the ultimate goal coming out of this ridiculous stretch that the NFL should be ashamed of for making the Steelers and others go through three games in 10 days is almost like an exhibition season goal of let's just get through this healthy. A lot's at stake here, but mostly what's at stake is key players' health, especially when you look at Tomlin's history last year and many other years in the playoffs of not having people healthy. That would be a win of sorts to get through these three with TJ, Cam, Russell Wilson, and Pickens on the other end of this thing, healthy and ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, the postseason obviously is the ultimate goal. Be nice to show what you can do in Philly, but really it's kind of boiling down to you beat the Ravens in that game a week from now, and you're probably home free wearing this division crown atop your head. Seeding matters, don't get me wrong, but I think ultimately getting that home game is paramount more than anything. And I was all excited to see how do the Steelers stack up with the Eagles? How do the Steelers stack up with the Ravens in Baltimore? And of course, the Chiefs coming here because they cannot beat the Chiefs. They have not been able to beat the Chiefs since Patrick Mahomes slid in there. Of course, I was expecting they would have all their bullets, or at least all the primary ones on offense, especially George Pickens, who he's one of those guys who almost superhuman. I mean, he's never been injured in the NFL. I know he had the torn ACL at Georgia, but even that, he came back so quick and still played for them in their most meaningful games down the stretch. So he's like one of those guys, can he even get hurt? And now here we are. So,
do you believe Tomlin when he was asked about his approach to this gauntlet, when he said, I'm just focused on Philly? I liked his answer. I mean, he said, this week is like a normal week is essentially what he said. But it's hard for me to believe if there's plans in place to preserve these guys in some way through this three-game stretch. I'm not sure it didn't already start. Cam only played 60-some percent of the snaps the other day. I just think it's smart business to manage these guys' snaps through what they're being asked to do is reprehensible, actually, by the NFL, to put your body through that three times in 10 days.
11 days for the Steelers.
11, but, okay.
Yeah. Other teams have 10, I think. I think there are six teams that have 3 and 10. So,
do you believe that it's just like I'll worry about that starting with the two games in 5 days or whatever it is, 4 days?
To some extent, yes, because coaches are so singularly focused. I think Tomlin is very laser focused that way too. And they've been taking steps throughout the season. I mean, Cam barely practices anymore. I think he practices on Fridays, and that's about it. Otherwise, he's He's in resting Wednesdays and Thursdays, which he said he doesn't really like to do, but he understands why, and it's clearly working out for him the way he's playing. So maybe you'll start to see more rest days for other guys like TJ Watt, Najee Harris as well. George Pickens, well, you know, can't put that toothpaste back in the tube, but we'll see when he gets back. And hopefully he only misses one more game for them, because as good as Mike Williams played at times, he's not George Pickens.
I guess I'd also have to know on Pickens, how commonplace is it when a guy has a hamstring situation just to say, hey, to be safe, let's MRI this right away? I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, that's above my pay grade for sure.
But let's call a doctor, shall we?
Maybe one will call in.
Limits, could we have a doctor call in? Is it normal procedure when somebody tweaks a hamstring or a groin to want to find out, when this is your business in the NFL, right away how serious it is before we start determining whether he'll play in a game? I would. Oh, my God, we know a doctor, Dr. Dick at Duquesne.
Yeah, but he's not that kind of doctor.
Is he orthopedic?
No. Oh. He's an academic doctor.
Oh, well, if anybody out there has any orthopedic expertise, just let us know. The bar is very low. You could be a freshman undergrad on the pre-med track. If you have an orthopedic book on your desk right now, we might
now,
take
have you.
Now,
have you quoted Dr. Dick?
No.
From Duquesne?
I don't think so.
Sports marketing guy. All right. Okay. Well, let's get to this. Let's hear what Tomlin actually said about George Pickens.
Yeah, because a lot of people had questions about the timeline. I mean, it was very confusing, I think.
Well, the timeline's been confusing. Yeah. The MRI in there. Now, it wasn't a broken MRI machine like Ben in Oakland, was it?
Oh, and as Ray Fittipaldo put it in our pregame chat on the Post-Gazette website, it's George. You can't roll anything out.
Right.
I mean, he's in that zone right now of, exactly. I would believe just about anything.
I think a lot of people were conspiring on the idea that he hurt his leg punting the ball in the end zone. I've seen that a number of times.
We better have Pat Freiermuth sit out practice Wednesday and Thursday too, then.
I mean, I don't know, Limits. Can a doctor call the show? Please. Is it normal to before you're going to make a decision on whether somebody's going to play, especially somebody whose job is primarily sprinting throughout the whole game, to do an immediate MRI just to rule out anything worse than a tweak?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty important. And, I mean, you have the level of facilities
call
to be able
doctor.
To do that.
Imagine if Tomlin would
have
called back
to
that Giants game or that Cowboys game and said, guys, this is why we talked about the snap management, the load management component with George.
Maybe Arnie Smith mentions that this week. Maybe he'll deliver the next I told you so, like Tomlin did the other day.
Yeah.
I told you Van Jefferson and Scotty Miller were good. Maybe now you'll believe me. Then we'll get Artie saying, this is why George only played 30% of the snaps.
You guys
that
thought it
night.
Was all disciplinary, right, but
exactly.
No, we needed to save him for the stretch run.
Exactly. All right. Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Coming up, lots of subjects the Steelers coach got into, and we're going to play some of his clips, starting with the Pickens one coming back. Limits wondered about the soft tissue injury. So did Ray.
That was a good question by Ray.
Great minds think alike. We'll play and talk about that. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. The injury report brought to you by Shenderovich, Shenderovich and Fishman. They got your back, not your wallet. Well, the report is, what an odd timeline with George Pickens and his MRI. Did we get any physicians calling the show? Any orthopods?
No, nobody has chimed in yet.
412-928-9370.
But somebody on the text line did.
Yeah.
Dr. Donnie from Waynesburg.
Dr. Donnie.
Is this Donnie Football, maybe?
Donnie Football.
Saying an MRI should be done within 72 hours, but if George was saying that the pain wasn't bad, they probably assumed it was minor until the symptoms lingered or got worse after testing it pregame.
Hmm. Okay. To me, if TJ Watt tweaks his groin today or his hamstring or tomorrow or the next day, and he says, it's okay, it's not that bad, do you not go ahead and do an MRI as soon as possible? And I realize sometimes you can't do it right away and get the right results, but as soon as possible, Brian, to determine if TJ Watt, if it's smart to put him on a football field? I don't know. I would do it as soon as possible, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know necessarily how these processes work. I mean, it's probably case by case basis for everybody. I think listening to Mike Tomlin, it sounds as if it was a hamstring tweak or pull or whatever Thursday after practice. You know, these
How
guys
did he
run
get
routes.
Hurt, by the way,
these guys run routes after practice. I think that's essentially what Tomlin said.
Are we sure it wasn't running into a blocking sled in practice?
It wasn't a blocking sled. It was a strength and conditioning sled. But yes, your point stands.
But how wouldn't that be a question? Like, was he running a route, Mike, or how did he hurt it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon for Russell Wilson or Justin Fields or even Kyle Allen to throw to these guys when practice ends. And it does seem like a strange amount of guys get going down during the week this season. Now, Troy Fautanu's one. I don't think that was a soft tissue injury, though, for him. Roman Wilson played in one game, and then all of a sudden he aggravates a hamstring.
Limits brought
practice.
This up earlier. It was on your mind.
Well, Fields.
Fields. Well, yeah, Fields is another one. That was practice.
Yeah.
Now Pickens.
The Roman Wilson re-aggravation in practice and everything that went on during camp as well seemed kind of odd.
Well, he had an ankle injury in camp. I think it was a high ankle sprain. I watched that one happen. Anthony Averett tackled him in seven shots. And
at least a blocking sled didn't tackle him. Whose idea was it to have the quarterbacks run into blocking sleds?
It was
sleds?
Not a blocking sled, Joe.
What was it?
It was one of those strength and conditioning sleds where you put plates on, weights, a weighted sled.
You're the
sled.
First guy I've heard say it wasn't a blocking
I've
sled
I've been saying
with
that
Russell.
Since it happened. He wasn't running into the thing that has a face mask with 67 on it that the offensive lineman pushed
during
Well,
why didn't you
practice.
Tell everybody else this?
I have.
Well, why don't they listen?
Why didn't you read it?
I only read your stuff half the time.
Okay, well, you missed that one. But
well, everybody else still thinks it's a blocking sled.
No, I think a lot of people realize what actually happened there, but it was not. For some reason, that's gotten, I don't want to say blown out of proportion because it was still a huge deal, and I still don't know if a quarterback who's about to be 36 should even be pushing the weight training sled.
Yeah, I would say a sled of any kind.
Yeah.
And it's almost immaterial what kind
but
of sled.
It looks a lot more stupid if you're pushing a blocking sled, but that's not what they were doing.
All right, coming up next, let's hear Tomlin on Pickens, and then let's hear Tomlin about these soft tissue injuries. And what is happening with this, with the Steelers during practices? Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevy. 0% financing on all 2024 Chevrolet EV models up to 60 months through January 3rd with credit through GM Financial. High of 56 today with sunny skies. Brian Batko of the Post-Gazette joining me today, as he does in the wake of every Tomlin news conference. We'll break it all down next. Your calls, welcomed, I should say, at 412-928-9370.